started.
All right, hey, one, two, ready, go. Mic check, one, two, mic check, one, two. What to do, what the business is. Welcome to another episode of the MDX Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mr. Maurice Prophet.
And I'm Danny Dang.
And tonight we have a very, 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 very special episode of the MDX Prophet. And so a couple weeks ago, we touched that we're going to have a special treat for all the listeners and everything. And a special treat? Like what is it, candy? It is pretty much like candy. But we have a special treat coming up and all, so and that's what this episode is. In addition to our normal episode, you're gonna get this bonus episode of what we're doing tonight. And so we really hope you guys, you know, sit back, relax. It's gonna be a little bit different, a different tone. Obviously, because we're going to be a little more professional than we normally are, but we're going to have fun still. Obviously, I just want to give a short introduction of who we have tonight. She is a former professional wrestler. She has been wrestling since the age of 14 years old. She has toured all over the world while applying her craft. She is the 1976 PWI Girl Wrestler of the Year, a two-time PGWA champion, the class of 2011 NWA Hall of Fame inductee, a former four-time NWA Texas Women's Champion, a former NWA World Tag Team Champion, a former NWA World Women's Champion with a victory over the Fabulous Moolah, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the MDX Podcast, it is an honor and privilege to bring to you Miss Susan, the Texas Queen Green.
That was a heck of a build-up, Maurice. Thank you very much.
We had to go big. We had to go big because this is a big-time interview. Mrs. McGreen, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I'm just coming in from out of the gym. I had two new students that I was training from 5 o'clock till 7 o'clock.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So you're still like really active with the schooling, with the training and everything and whatnot?
I'm still active. Actually, whenever the promoters are willing to pay me, I'm still climbing in the ring against opponents.
I know that's right. You got follow-ups checks.
Yeah.
How's the students look tonight?
One of them's doing very well. The other one is a little slow.
Yeah.
It's just a dedication of wanting to learn that you're going to beat yourself up before I beat you up.
I know. Right. Exactly. They got to toughen themselves up before they're ready.
That's it.
That's excellent. So, Ms. Green, you know, I got to tell you, this is a true honor to be able to talk to you tonight. Just to let you know, we were kind of touching on it a little bit before the show started, but really how this all came about, it was such a shot in the dark, and we got really lucky with this. The legend, Miss Leilani Kai, her and I are Facebook friends, and probably about a month ago, I want to say it was, at the beginning of April, I want to say, Miss Kai posted asking everybody, you know, does anyone have a podcast or a radio show that you run? And of course, you know, because everyone follows Miss Kai, so there was a lot of people on her thread saying, like, you know, they have this podcast, they have that radio show, da da da. I felt like, you know what, shot in the dark. I'll throw mine and Danny's podcast on there, you know, for, you know, see what happens. You never know. And so I posted a link on the comments to our show, MDX Podcast. And probably about a couple weeks later, she was in my inbox saying, hey, I know you got a podcast. I would like for you to get in contact with Susan Green. She's going to the Hall of Fame. I think it'll be a great interview. I'm like, yeah, of course, definitely. So after she linked us up together, That's when, you know, you and I started talking, we started communicating. Danny, you know, I was telling Danny everything, so he started, getting everything together and whatnot. So that's kind of like how we got here. It really was like a shot in the dark that I was able to hit the bullseye. So very, very much excited about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think a lot of our listeners, they're all really, really diehard wrestling fans. But they came up during a time where, women's wrestling was not as promoted or not as popular as it is right now. So they came up in a time where, we're looking at the late 90s during the Attitude Era, during the WWE era and such, the WWF Attitude Era. So they don't know so much about what was happening back in the old school days. So can you give us kind of a rundown in terms of about your background and about how you got started and how you got influenced and when you started and everything?
I'm probably one of the very few that actually got to wrestle the ones that they saw wrestle and became, that was the spark in my heart that made me want to be a wrestler when I saw Marie De Leon from San Antonio wrestle Evelyn Stevens. And I looked at my dad mm-hmm. and sat there and said, I was as tough as they were, and I was only 5 mm-hmm. years old.
Knew it then.
And Joe Blanchard, I talked to him. He was the promoter and they're in Corpus Christi, and he said, well, you have to grow up a little bit first. But I constantly was doing stuff in school and sports. I was a swimmer and a tennis player to show him that I could take discipline and that I truly had the spirit that I wanted to wrestle. And the summer before my junior year, 14 years old, before my 15th birthday, he let me train. And I actually got my first match on my 15th birthday, which was August 13th of 69. So it was quite a memory for my 15th birthday.
While people are, trying to get their driving permit, at 15, you're over here having a wrestling match, for yours.
Yeah, my parents actually had to go before the governor of Texas for me to get licensed to be a wrestler because of not being able to drive. It was like they couldn't believe that somebody was going to let their child step in the ring to fight, and it was to prove that I wasn't going into child labor, that, the money I made was going to be mine. But the governor signed off, and let me get my first wrestling license at the age of 15, and then my brothers and sisters were driving me to the matches when my parents couldn't take me for me to wrestle. And I had one of Johnny May Young's last matches in Phoenix, Arizona that, we drove all the way out from Texas to Phoenix for me to get beat up.
Wow.
And then my brother also drove me up to Memphis, Tennessee for Cora Combs to beat me up.
It's like a tour of pain that you're enduring, kind of like what you're putting your student through right now.
and at that time I was 112 pounds because they were 100, I think May was like 180 at the time, and Cora was maybe 135, 140. And Cora was nice enough to tell me, kid, you need to put some more weight on. And I sit there and said, I'm still in high school and I'm a swimmer. And all she could do was shake her head and think, oh, my God,
So you've always been an athlete, always been very athletic, obviously, doing swimming and track and everything. So what was it about pro wrestling, though, that really made it kind of stand away from everything else? Was it because it was so much more physical, so much more challenging?
It was the physical part, but whenever I got to talk to some of the ladies, I got to wrestle Kay Nobles and Betty Nicolai, Jean Antone, and all these ladies, Sandy Pardlow. It was the travel that got me, I wanted to see the world, get paid doing it. Getting to wrestle these women that Barbara Galento and all, it was like some of these people and most of the ones that I talk to now that are wrestlers have never heard of them. And I said, well, you need to look back in the history book. They were the ones that made me want to be a wrestler because I saw how physical they were and that they didn't take putting it blunt, crap off or nobody.
Right.
And in today's world, you know, you get the barricades wherever you walk out, and you the fans aren't up to you, and the fans got to run up to the ring and get autographs, and you were really hands-on with the people whenever I came up, and the way I saw it, you know. In Mexico, when I wrestled down there in 1970, I actually got stabbed by a fan, you know, because the fans walked you to the ring, and they was right there around you, walking you back to the dressing room, and my mouth opened up and said, Viva la Alamo, and that was the wrong thing to say in Mexico City.
Oh, man.
It got me stabbed.
Oh, you want someone getting some heel heat? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, how old were you when that happened?
16.
Oh, man. Welcome to the business.
Yeah, that was a wide-eye opening.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, 1 year into the business and you're going to get stabbed in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right. It's all part of the package. It always seems like that there's always that one story because, you know, a lot of times you hear about that. Like, you know, like when Mick Foley, I believe it was, in his book, he was talking about like when he first went down there as well, too. He was, you know, a fan came at him with a knife as well and happened in Puerto Rico as well and everything. So I think it's kind of like what's the word I'm going with? Rites of passage happens, I guess, to wrestlers. Yeah. Chris Jericho talked about it as well, too. So
yeah.
It's just crazy how it happened.
Yeah.
Now, were you trained directly from Joe Blanchard, by Joe Blanchard?
Yes.
Nice.
I was trained by him, and Blackjack Mulligan was my training partner. You know, I knew him as Bob, and call him Bob, and whenever we'd meet, it was like, you know, we'd start talking over the old days, and everyone's looking at us like, y'all trained together? And I thought, yeah.
Right.
And so, mm-hmm. whenever he gave me the first body slam, of course, I looked back because I was so high up in the ground, and Joe Blanchard, one of the first things he said is, whenever your feet leave that mat, don't look back because it'll be right where your feet left it. And, of course, when I was dropping down from this body slam, I looked back and about knocked myself out, and he says, the mat was right where you left it, wasn't it? And I thought, yes, sir. Look back again.
Right. But lesson learned. Seriously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm very curious about this because with you going into the business at 14 years old, how were you received by other wrestlers who were training? Or even who are already in the business, like were they kind of looking at you like, is this a joke? Only because like you were so young, so were they receptive of it? Were they kind of confused by it, like not knowing how to really take you being so young, but you are training, or was there like a respect factor that was like, oh, you know, I respect that.
Most of them respected me because I was able to do as much as they did, if not more. And one of the things that Joe Blanchard made us do, we had to run 5 miles before we started the next 7.5 hours of training.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, so our day of training, we ran 5 miles, and we had to do it under 30 minutes. If you didn't do it under 30 minutes when you finished your 7.5 hours of training, you did another 5 miles.
Oh,
you know, so I figured if I could keep Bob in my eyesight, that I could, because he was coming out off of pro football, that I'd make it under 30 minutes, you know. And I stayed right on his heels, and we'd get in under, you know, 24 minutes, 26 minutes. You know, we always made it under 30. We didn't have to ever rerun.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I think that's what grabbed him and sat there and said, you know, you're going to be tough. And I thought,
right.
you got to be tough in this business. You know,
yeah.
Not realizing how much tougher I really needed to be until I went to Mexico. But, you know, I was still in high school when I went down there, and I said, you know, thank goodness it was on the Christmas holidays because I had a week to recover after being stabbed.
Jeez. Amongst everything else that happened down there, too, all the bumps you had to take and everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So you said that earlier. You said that one of your influences when you first started watching was watching Miss Maria De Leon, correct?
Yes.
Was she your first match that you had?
She was my very first match.
On your birthday, all right. So yeah. So that, what was that like? Just, you know, because you're basically wrestling, you know, you're kind of like your hero, you know, who you're a fan of and everything.
Oh, yeah. Nervous because I knew what she could do, and I didn't think I was trained enough to be able to respond to everything that she was doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, first match going up against somebody that's been wrestling 10 years, it's like, you know, she's got me beat with hands downs, you know.
Yeah.
But it was very, very respectful on her behalf because she sat there and said she knew I was nervous. You know, just keep my chin up. Things would look up one day.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Three years later, I actually had her retiring match. I came into the San Antonio and was there for the holidays with my parents. And Joe said, "You want to wrestle?" I said, "Sure." And he had Maria sign the contract, and, of course, she said whenever she turned around and saw me jumping over the top rope, it was time for her to quit.
She's like, "Oh, man, it's over with."
Yeah, you know, I went from 112 pounds to 212 pounds, and it was time to hang up her boots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's like, you know, Sue is no longer a little girl.
Yeah.
Sue, what's your favorite match that you had in your career?
I would sit there and say the one where I made Mula sit there and say I quit when I took the NWA World title from her.
There you go. What was that like?
You know, they had, in fact, I got the poster hanging in my bedroom wall. From that match, you know, Dory Funk was a world champion wrestling Ivan Putski, and they brought in Mike Mazurki. He was a movie star that did Frankenstein, wrestler turned movie star, but he always played Frankensteins in the movies. He was a special referee in the two main events. Then it was there in Dallas, Texas, at the old Sportatorium, and we walked out. And I jumped over the top rope, and we walked out to the center of the ring and was getting instructions, and for no reason at all, she slapped me. And then Mike sat there and said, when my head snapped back looking at her, he saw the smoke coming out of my ears and the flames out of my eyes, and I just said, "Beat me if you can."
Oh, man.
So he knew he was in for a fight.
Right.
Yeah. So I ended up hooking her in a Indian deathlock, which is a leg hole, and she looked up at him and said, "You know, how long?" And I just sat there and said, "Oh, about 23." And Mike said, "She's right." And then she held on for a few minutes, and then she said, "I quit." You know, and of course she told Fritz to get her a ticket back home to Columbia, and she didn't make any of the other matches that week that she was supposed to wrestle me. So, of course, I held the belt for 3 months, and Vince Sr. had me fly up to New York or Connecticut to the office to talk and what it was going to do to give her the belt back. And I said, "Well, that's the magic word, give." Yeah. I said, because
right.
She can't beat me. Because back in the 60s and 70s, if you didn't work for Lillian Ellison's Girls School of Wrestling, you didn't wrestle statewide. You know, you didn't wrestle other than in Detroit. The Sheik had some of his people up there that had trained girls, and he used them once or twice a year. And Joe said, "I can use you down here once or twice." And, of course, Funk Sr. up in Amarillo, he said a couple of times a year, "Well, I wanted to go full-time. You know, I wanted to make it my living," mm-hmm. which I had the full lifetime of my living. Of course, I had my neck broken and back broken, a boating accident in 79, and it took 2 years of recuperation.
Goodness, yeah.
You know, Joe Blanchard gave me, he says, "You know, well, doctor says you're not supposed to step in the ring." And I said, "Well, will you give me a try?" And Joe Blanchard actually let me have the second shot of seeing if I could wrestle again after my neck and back was broke. Yeah, so, and then 81, I stepped back in the ring in against none other than Evelyn Stevens. So I sat there and I said, at least I had the weight over her, and I sat there and said, stay away from my neck and back, and I won't have a problem. But if they go for a headlock, they'll see the fire coming from my eyes again, because doctors had sat there and said that my neck was going to be very delicate. And I said,
right.
You know, I knew enough after wrestling for 10 years, and I had trained well enough, and I actually got the ring that I trained in that I'm training people in. When a hurricane went through Corpus Christi and tore up the building, Joe sat there and said, if you want to crawl under there and get it, it's yours. And I crawled under the mess and ring post by ring post, drug it out, and side railings and all, you know. So I'm actually, when people hear that story and they sit down and say, this thing's hard, and I thought, so? It's what I trained in.
yeah, exactly. If I can take it, you can take it, yeah.
yeah.
So you have one of the really old school rings then.
Oh, yeah. If you can land in my ring, you can land on concrete.
I know, that's right.
there's nowhere that you're going to fall that's going to be harder than what you're landing in when you're getting taught.
Right.
And you definitely know how to protect yourself. And I said, it's all about being able to protect yourself and stand safe.
Oh, without question. Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, about the accident, because I saw you had both a broken back and a broken neck. I wasn't so sure if it was like in the ring action or if it was outside, but you clarified that it was outside. So
yeah.
Did you notice a difference in your style when you were able to come back after 3 years?
I got rougher. It's one of those that, you know, I knew I couldn't play. I had to be out there to take care of business. You know, I couldn't give them a chance to do something stupid and cause me to get hurt.
Right.
So I sit there and said that don't try to do anything stupid to cause me to break my neck or back again, and you're going to be okay. But you try to start doing something stupid that you don't know how, and as Ric Flair says, we'll go to school.
So true.
Yeah.
So true, exactly. You don't want that.
No,
they do not want that.
When I'm training guys, if I have two or three over here that I've trained and they start doing something stupid, they see me getting my boots on, they go, oh, my God. And it's like, if you do what I tell you to do, I don't have to get up there. But if you want to be stupid, I can show you I can do it.
In other words, like, don't test me.
I had a young man that was 19 years old. He wrestles under the name of Big Hoss now from here in Columbia, and he's a power lifter, 450 pounds.
Yeah.
And he'd sit there and came in, and I'd always said, don't eat before you come out here because you'll get sick. And, of course, him and his buddy that was training with him, they come walking through and had a big whopper in their hand. I thought, what are y'all doing? And it was, we bounced last night. We're hungry. And I thought, y'all chose to have wrestling at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday and Saturdays, you know, y'all are stupid. I said, you know, I'm going to tell you now, if you get sick, you clean my ring up. If you get sick in it, you better get outside.
Right.
And, of course, I sat there,
yeah.
And they just paid me the day before, and I sat there, and he said, well, you don't have to show me how to fall because I'm 450 pounds and you can't knock me down. You know, I'm too big. And I said, oh, really?
Huh.
And he said, yeah. And I said, what do you want to bet? And I said, and he said, I bet you $20. And I said, put it over there under the turnbuckle. And he says, well, where are yours? And I said, well, you know, I got the money you and Brian just paid me. It's in the house because it was paid on the weekend, and I can't been to the bank yet. But I'm going to make it real interesting for you. I'm going to bet you 3-1 that I can knock you down. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm going to give you $60, and you're going to get your $20 back if I can't knock you down. But I swear I'm going to knock you down. You're going to be picking yourself up. And he sat there and said, really? And I said, yeah. And Brian looked at me and he said, don't get me on this bet. And I said, it's not yours to bet. It's between me and him. And mind you, I'm about 37 and he's 19. And we're going along, and all of a sudden I sit there and thought, well, we're getting close to being finished here. So he was close to a turnbuckle, and I came up with a boot to his gut. He bent over, and I hooked his arm and started shoving his head down. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there looking, and I said, it's your choice, tear your shoulder up or flop over. And he flopped over, and I went over to get his 20 bucks, and he said, well, that wasn't Purdy. I said, I didn't say nothing about Purdy. I just said I could.
I know that's right. I can get the job done.
Yeah, and he said there, and I said, okay, I'm going to learn to fall.
And you're like, I tried to tell you, I tried to warn you, but you didn't want to listen. And look what happened.
To this day, he'll sit there and say, I got her back. Whatever she says she can do, I know she can, because she won't. She don't let her alligator mouth overload her mockingbird tail.
he had to learn, but he learned right, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he learned right. That's fantastic. Now, I want to go back to when you mentioned earlier about the Fiend Moolah and winning the NWA Women's Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So the way how that was done, correct me if I'm wrong, did Moolah own the belt? So even though you won, it technically was still under the under Vince Senior's flag, right? Like he still had her as a recognized champion, right?
Yes. Her belt that she carried all over the place. If they look at it, whenever they look at her display case, they'll see that it was won in Baltimore, Maryland, and it gives the date that it was won, and it also has Moolah. They in raised letters. It's on her belt that it, you know,
okay.
It was her belt, and all. They had three other belts. Mildred Burke had one of them. June Byers had one, and I don't know who had the other one, but. All the promoters back in the late 50s and 60s loved to see Mildred Burke and June Byers wrestle because, as they said, the better girl won each one of those matches. They never knew who was going to win it because it was whichever one of those could hold out the longest and had the better hold.
Wow.
You know, that they would get beat, you know, and they said that they knew they'd sit there and I'd tell him, you know, you want a day off. And I got to talk to June Byers before she passed it. And she says, you know, just be true to yourself, you know. Don't let anybody tell you what you have to do, you know. Be true to yourself, you know. Because the fans are going to go behind you and people are going to like you. And the promoters, if they see you and you have something that they want, then it's you they're going to want. And,
right.
Of course, Lillian had chances that whoever owed her the most money was the ones that stayed on the road and when I went out there, I had a car and I put a phone in my apartment that I've rented and it was like, well, you can use my phone. You don't have to have a phone. And it's like, I ain't going to talk in front of you, you know.
Right.
And me having a car meant I didn't have to take a bus or a train, you know, that I could drive wherever I wanted to go. And
yeah.
I didn't depend, and whenever she got to where she said, you know, well, you got 3 months off. Well, my mechanic actually was her boyfriend, and
okay.
I sit there and I said, I got a CDL license, and he sit there and said, no, you don't, and I said, yes, I do, and he says, you want to drive a wrecker, and I thought, yeah. Well, I went to driving a wrecker for him, so I could call him and say, I'm going to be in town at midnight, can I go by the shop? And he says, you got a key to get you in. You got the wrecker. And back in the 70s, you had to listen to a radio and see where the wrecks were and
right.
try to talk the victims into letting you pull their car. And I said, I had the perfect scenario to tell them. I said, you know, when I pull your car into our grounds, we have the body shop, we have the machine shop, we have the transmission shop, we have the radiator shop.
Yeah.
We don't have to send it anywhere. It's going to stay at the same
right.
location to get everything paid. And then 90% of the time, they'd sit there and say they want to see that girl pull my car, you know. And then back in the 70s, Mathis Garage was the only wrecker service that had a big wrecker that could pull 18-wheelers. So I said, I got to do all of those. And I said, they'd just laugh because they said, we never thought you'd get that up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
So they're scratching their heads, like, how is this even happening? How is he doing this?
Yeah, and it's like, you're too young to know how to do this. And I thought, well, when you had, I had, you know, Mr. Mathis took me out and showed me how to do everything. And I sat there and said, you know, we had a yard that he could tump stuff over, and I could practice pulling it up and see how I need to put blocks and stuff down. So she wasn't happy that he gave me a job, and then she sat there and wanted part of my money because I was working for him. And he says, you know, she's paying Uncle Sam, so if she wants to pay you more money than what she's paying you already, then you tell her. And I sat there and said, you know, Lillian, my deal with you is that as long as I'm between those ropes, I pay you.
Right.
If I'm making money elsewhere, the money's mine. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you gotta get a life and either keep me in the ring or don't get paid. You know.
Yeah.
So she kept me in the ring pretty much.
All right. Well, when you put it that way, it made her say, yeah, okay. Good point.
Yeah.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So I know. So you've been with a variety of different promotions. You've been with PGWA, LPWA, WPW. Did you ever entertain the idea of possibly signing with either the two big, either WWF or WCW?
WWF called me and before they took China, because I actually did some hands-on training with China, Joni. And,
okay.
Of course, whenever she was leaving here or with me, I sat there and said, you know, I can send you over to Holland and got her over to Holland in the U.K. to wrestle some. But I sat there and told him, Van Gilder, I said, look, she sent paperwork and they sent up videos to WWF and, you know, she's really wanting to go up there. So if she comes over for 21 days, she may be there 2 days, and she may be there 21 days before she gets this phone call, but she knows that she sent a lot of stuff, and it may be biting. Well, she ended up being there 19 days when she got the phone call, because they gave her 3 days to get back to New York or Connecticut to have for them to offer what they had to offer. And of course, they talked to me, and I sat there and said, you know, I'm not willing to wear a two-piece, you know, I'll wear a one-piece bathing suit like I did for Vince Sr. And the first time they went for my straps on my bathing suit, it would be the last time they went for the straps on anybody's bathing suit. And then Junior sat there and said, well, it's nice that you're honest with us. And I said,
right.
You know, thank you very much for the offer, but, you know, no thanks. And that's when they got Joni to go up, and I said, you know, they're going to try to get you on steroids. And no. And I thought, they're going to get you on steroids. And of course, everybody knows that she definitely was on steroids. Because we could have easily have been sisters. You know, she was 5'10", and everybody thought that she was 6 foot or better. And I sat there and said, you know, we had pictures of us training and working out in my gym. We looked like sisters, you know, with my dark hair and her dark hair. We could easily pass for sisters. And of course, she ended up going into the black hair because that's what they wanted her, and taking the steroids and all that to beef up. And I just sit there, and I told Junior, I was too old to cut my life short, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted to live to a ripe old age. I didn't want that to take me out.
No, that's true. Yeah, no, that's you gotta think about the long haul.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a smart idea, though.
Yeah.
Definitely
well,
a smart idea.
I talked with Billy Graham, superstar Billy Graham, and he sat there and said if he had known back in the '60s and '70s what the steroids were going to do to his joints, he wouldn't have took it. You know, and he was one of the first to take the steroids to get the size and. But, you know, everybody learns from the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they think it's not going to happen
because,
to them.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, too, is that because when the steroid boom happened, it was so new.
Yeah.
And all you were seeing were results. You weren't seeing the after effects, like the long-term after effects, because it was so new to everyone across the board. And so you're actually not really thinking of, you know, what the after effects could be. Mm-hmm. And like you said as well too, if there were any after effects or a hack that started to kind of like peak on people who are using, you were thinking to yourself, it's not going to be me. I'll moderate what I take. I'll be very cautious and everything, but it won't be me. But then it becomes them. And he's absolutely right. I think a lot of athletes, especially wrestlers, unfortunately, fell into those traps. So, that's wonderful that you had the foresight to be like, nah, I'm good on that. Don't need that drama in my life.
Yeah.
Sue, do you watch today's product at all?
No, every once in a while I will take up the Ring of Honor because their girls do have size and they do try to do some of the more of the wrestling instead of the being the acrobats and
right
stuff with the women, and the men wives are not with Ring of Honor or not on the steroids. There's some that you can tell have used it, but they're more of the natural deals. And the girls, once again, they have some size and don't try to be all acrobatic, and they're not looking to be a Barbie doll.
Right, right. Because I know, because you're coming from the old school styles, and you want to see action. You don't want to see pretty girls running around.
Yeah, show me the headlocks and the drop kicks and then the step. And I can't tell you when the last time I saw somebody use a step over toe hold, because when I was showing the gentleman tonight, it was like, well, what do you call this? And I said, it's a step over toe hold.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't see that. And I thought,
right.
Well, it's because it's old school. But I said, once we go a little farther, I said, I can show you a roll from doing this hole. And I said, it's something that was done in the 50s. That was an everyday move in the early 60s and even up to the late 60s, that step over toe hole roll. It was a move that was used, better be able to know how to execute it or how to break it or how to stop it, because if you didn't, you're going to knock yourself out when you got it given to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. I'm really glad that he did not say, hey, that's John Cena's move. What are you doing that for? I'm so glad he did not say that. I much rather him ask you what that was. He's saying something so ridiculous. So I'm glad to hear that he was questioning, that he was asking what it was versus what it could have been. So
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, yeah, but you're right, especially with that move, too, because that move, back in the day was considered very, a highly skilled move because it is pretty complicated to apply it properly. So back then it had to be, a very skilled level to be able to use that move properly and everything, especially.
Right.
So, absolutely. So, let's talk about the Hall of Fame that's going into. So the Hall of Fame is going to be later on this month, correct?
Yes. I fly out on the 18th, and I'll come back on the 22nd, simply because I said I didn't want to have no long layovers.
Yeah. Is the ceremony taking place in New York or is it in Texas?
No, it's in Wichita Falls, Texas.
Okay.
The Hall of Fame that was in New York or Connecticut, I guess it was New York, they moved it to Wichita Falls because the gentleman, Tony, that was running it in New York, the weather was so bad he couldn't have it open but a few times out of the year. And now out in Wichita Falls, it's open year-round.
It's sunny all year, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, the people are able to pay and go through and see all the displays and everything that people have donated to be in the display case. Which I sit there and said I'd packed and unpacked a box so many times that I finally last time I thought I'm over. they're getting this, and I actually sent pictures of me wearing what I donated. I've got pictures of me in the ring wearing what I've got donated. And I said,
oh, nice.
Told Johnny Mantell, I said, well, the only thing you don't have is the white boots that I have under those black chaps, because I'm still wrestling, and so I'm not giving my boots away yet.
Yeah, exactly. not done yet. Not hanging up the boots yet now.
yeah. But I did give away, I have a picture of Nelson Royal and me in the dressing room, and the white boots, my very first white boot, my very first boots that I ended up polishing white because everything used to be black. I have a picture with those on and all. So he sat there and said that would be amazing that I had these pictures to show people that I did wear this stuff.
Right. Yeah, and it really helps with the authenticity as well, too, to be able to show, like, you know, what you're looking at right here is actually what was worn, so you'll be able to make the connection immediately and everything, whoever sees it.
Yeah.
It's perfect. So you're in the 2011 NWA Hall of Fame inductee, and you're also, you're in Cauliflower Alley as well, too, correct?
Right, yeah, that was 1994.
Yeah. So how does this one that's coming up for the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, how does it compare with the previous two?
It's there are peers that are in the Hall of Fame that get to vote on the ones that they think are to be in it. They've changed it from when it was in New York. You had to be retired to be able to be in it up in New York and now in Texas because there's so many of us that are still active that – have a chance that should be recognized, that he took that stipulation out. There's 45 living ones that are actually living, that are inducted into the PWHF, that got the vote. I think
wow.
Danny said I got 47 out of the 45 votes, So that it was hands down that I was going in.
Exactly, absolutely, and to be able to be voted by your peers, especially by that amount, blowing amount, this really says a lot about about you, your character, your relationship, with everyone else, your thumbprint into the business as well too, and what the legacy that you have created. So it says a lot. It really does say a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And everything. So that has to be a really fantastic feeling.
Yeah.
You're going in there with some amazing company as well too. I looked up the whole wall. We're being inducted in the 2017 PWHF.
Yeah.
And you're going.
Mick Foley and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah, Harley Foley.
Yeah.
Fujinami.
Yeah.
Larry the Axe Henning, Dirty Dick Reigns, Larry Von the Lion, Robert. I mean, some really big names, who have really like created a lot of rumbles in wrestling. So it's gonna be a really interesting. It's gonna be a fantastic evening.
Oh yeah, it definitely is.
Do you know if this will be videotaped or like will be on YouTube or be available for viewing in some type of way?
I've heard it's going to be videotaped. Johnny said it was. I'm going to kind of stress, if not, that I'll take my camera and have the ceremonies videoed.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is something that I think that people should not miss, fans should not miss. You know, just to be able to, just to see you all be honored and hear your stories, hear your words, and really share this very special moment with you. I think this is something that should really be shared across the board with all our fans because they really appreciate to be able to see this.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. So this is really fantastic. And what's the day of the Hall of Fame again? I'm sorry.
PWHF.
And what's the date?
Oh, I fly out the 18th. It's actually the 19th, 20th, and 21st that the event's actually going on.
Oh, it's a 3-day event.
Yeah. The 19th.
Oh, yeah.
The 19th we do a meet and greet, and then that's on a Friday. Then Saturday, we have the dinner and get the awards presented to us, or the rings and the hats, because American Hat Company is presenting us with a hat.
Wow.
And then they have the Johnny said it's the Red Bastine brunch on Sunday. So I don't know really what all I hadn't had anybody really discuss that with me other than he said it's the brunch and it's just going to be all the wrestlers for us to mingle.
Oh, nice.
But that we do have the meet and greet for the people that want to, you know, get there early enough to visit with us. And then I had volunteered to wrestle on the show, but he said there and said it actually is going on when at the same time that we're doing the dinner and the award.
He said, I can't have you at both.
I said, well, I guess I'll have to pass on that. No, I'll have the dinner and receive my awards. And he says that we would go over to the matches afterwards and that we normally get there before the main event goes on for the fans that do go to the matches are able to come down
good.
And get pictures.
So, oh, wonderful, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. So, okay, so you guys will be at the wrestling card. That's the actual wrestling card.
Yeah, we do go to the wrestling cards after we have everything awarded to us and we get there tentatively before the main event goes on.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So if there are any listeners in the Wichita Falls, Texas area, if you're going to be in the area and you're going to be at that event, at the wrestling event, so, you know, make sure you're there. Make sure you get a ticket. Make sure you're there for the wrestling. Come for the wrestling. Stay for the Hall of Famers that will be there afterwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, get a picture, talk to them. You know, be able to, you know, shake their hands and everything, congratulate them, because they will be in the house.
They definitely be there.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. All right, then. Well, you know, this was a fantastic conversation. I really did appreciate speaking to you, Susan. I'm all out. You got anything else, buddy?
No, I'm still like, I'm just like, sitting here like awestruck still.
we'll have to do it again.
Absolutely.
Listening to your stories, and I'm just like getting goosebumps. Like I'm just like a little fanboy right now.
I try to tell people now that I still get just excited as I do going out in the crowd to wrestle for 200 or 300 people as I did whenever I wrestled in Madison Square or I wrestled in Victoria, Texas on my very first match when there might have been 100 people there.
Yeah.
That I still get the excitement running through me and nervous going out. So, it, you know, to me, I'm still a kid when I step in the ring.
Yeah.
There you go. It's
yeah.
One of those things where wrestling, wrestlers, wrestling fans, like, there's a bond that we all share that's like unmatched, I feel like, because the sport is such a niche sport, but when you find people that you can relate to and you can sit there and talk to, tell stories, it's like me like sitting down with like family members, you know, recounting stories. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Without question, absolutely. And plus, you know, it really says a lot too with you still getting into the ring, it just shows that you were built to laugh.
Oh, yeah.
you were built to laugh, seriously. I really funny that even with you going to the Hall of Fame that week, you're like, can I still get the match in? You know, you still need to be in the card. I absolutely love that, seriously.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, Susan, where can people find you? Are you on social? Pretty active on social media, like on Twitter, Facebook.
I'm on Facebook. I have my for the gym and everything. It talks about my training and everything. Susan Tex Green. Have a picture of me holding. I was actually in a mixed tag or six man tag down in Mobile this past March, and we won the match and we're in the center of the ring and I'm holding their hands up with mine. That's when they know that they got me in the gym.
Gotcha.
So
I saw that picture too. You're in the middle between the two guys, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Hold up. And
And then PWHF on PGWA. Excuse me. The one had the belt twice. On his page, he actually still promotes my gym.
Okay. Okay, perfect.
But look on the gem of pain and glory, and like I tell all the kids that start now, I said, if you can take the pain, I can get you the glory.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, so look up Gem of Pain and Glory, PGWA, and Susan Tex Green. Look them up on social media. Follow them. Follow the progress of the wrestlers that she's training as well too, and just like know all the upcoming things that's happening with the training camp and with anything else that's happening PGWA related and Susan Tex Green related as well too. So check it out. Look them up on Facebook and Google. I highly recommend anybody that's listening to look her up. Her matches on YouTube as well too. She has some really good matches that she's had with Leilani Kai and with Rockin' Robin as well too. So there's some really good matches on there. So check it out on YouTube. They're all over the place and everything. Very easy to find. Susan, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us today and let us do this interview. This is an absolute pleasure, an absolute delight, and we're just really glad that we're able to really talk to you and get your story out and really share, and you're able to share your stories with us. We really do appreciate this.
Well, I appreciate being able to share it with y'all. I look forward to being able to talk again.
Of course.
Thank you so much.
We'll definitely do this again.
All right.
All right. Take care, Susan. Have a great one.
You bet. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye. Danny?
Yo.
Hey.